Good morning, everybody. It's good to see back those of you who are back. As I say, our people must be, they must be someplace today. Anyway, I want to begin by introducing a very good friend of mine, Mr. Benny Krakowski, the fellow in the blue shirt over there. Whenever I'm in Toronto and I daven at Beit Avram Yosef of Toronto, we daven at the same minyan. And he came to Eretz Yisrael to hear a shir of mine. And as he's, once he's in Eretz Yisrael, he's going to go visit the country too. But we know why he came. And there's his grandson with him. And we welcome Benny over here. And we hope that you've had a wonderful visit here. And gesundheit, you should be able to come back time and time again. And give our regards to Thornhill. Thornhill. Thornhill is one of the northern parts of Toronto. The city has grown. The city has grown. There's a shul over there that is most probably one of the biggest Orthodox synagogues on the North American continent. I was there for Yom Yerushalayim, and there was a Yom Yerushalayim celebration called by Mizrahi for the city. There were about 800 people there, and one guest, who was the guest speaker? One guest. Does anybody have a clue? Anybody can figure it out? Oh, okay, very good. You figured it out. All right. It's all related to what I want to talk about. Once I got to Toronto, so there were two schools that were in touch with me and asked me if I would speak there on Yom Yerushalayim, which I did. I always feel that when there's an opportunity to speak to young, impressionable school children about Eretz Yisrael, I take the opportunity. There was an incident that happened in one of the schools, and a similar incident happened to me in shul. I want to describe the incident. It's very brief, but the whole shiur is going to be an outgrowth of that incident. And let me also caution you as well, you have four pages of text over here. Once I began to prepare the shiur, I saw that we're going to have to go into extra innings. This is not a shiur that I will be able to finish in 1 hour. It will certainly go into another hour. I personally believe that it's worthwhile. So, let's begin. You're going to have to follow me for a moment, but first I'll tell you what was the story. After I finished speaking in one of the schools, and in the hall on my way out, one or two of the teachers come over and bring a young man to me. I don't think he was more than 13. Maybe he was 14. Maybe he was 12. I doubt it. Anyway, the Rebbe tells me that he wants to ask me a question, okay? Here's the sage, white-bearded fellow from Jerusalem who is going to be asked a question by this young man, eager face. Yes. So he says to me, you know, the Gemara at the end of Ksubas says, you're not allowed to conquer Eretz Yisrael. You don't understand the word I'm talking about, that's fine. That's okay. Hopefully will you know. By the time I'm finished with you, you'll know. Anyway, I hear this question from the child, or the young man, really a young man. I understand what's going on over there. Somebody put him up to this. You're going to know all about that Gemara. You're going to know that Gemara backwards and forwards. Because that Gemara is an essential part of the history of the relationship between the Jewish people and Eretz Yisrael over the last 300 years. And I had thought that it had already passed from the world. It's alive and well. It's alive and well. There is a Gemara. There is a Gemara there. And we're going to talk at length about it. That there was an oath, so to speak, an oath administered to the Jewish people, Shelo Ya'alu Tachoma, that they should not come up en masse and conquer Eretz Yisrael. So of course this young man, if he understood what he was saying, he obviously is telling me that our being here in Eretz Yisrael was born in sin, and you know, so I'm a sinner together with all the rest. By the way, that one sentence in the Gemara has been used, and I would say truthfully abused by people as a reason not to be involved in Eretz Yisrael. Let's say the following. I will show you later there is a word that was coined by Rav Kook in 1905 in a letter that he wrote to the Jews of Europe. The letter begins with a call. Le'eretz Yisrael, Rabotai, Le'eretz Yisrael, let's go to Eretz Yisrael. And he describes with such precision what's going to happen in Russia, in Poland, in Hungary, in Germany. It was unbelievable. And he said, run for your lives. 1905. Run for your lives, he says. I, Rav Kook, and I have some selections. Now, of it here. You can see, you've got 4 pages. There's a lot of stuff to go through. Run for your lives. And he coins a phrase. The phrase that he coins is meragliyut. A meragel, the meraglim. Oh, by the way, it is Parashas Shlach. And Rabbi Adler has already prepared you, has laid the groundwork. Alright? It's Parashas Shlach. Meragliyut. Let's say meraglism. Unfortunately, what I learned from that 13-year-old boy in that school is that meraglihood or meragliism or meragliyut is alive and well. It still exists. And I don't know how it will ever be uprooted. I mean, most probably shook up that boy after I gave him, in 25 words or less, I told him why his question is no question. But I'm going to tell it to you at greater length. I told him, you should know, whoever put you up to ask me this question, 3 possibilities. A, B, C. He's an Amharetz. He's an ignoramus. He's a Rasha. Number 3, he's a Sonei Eretz Yisrael.
You didn't pull any punches.
Straight to the point. Have I ever been known to pull punches? Now, I couldn't even care if it was the Rebbe who was standing there was the one who put him up there. Magialo. That's what he deserves. That's all. Okay. Now I'm going to explain to you why the fellow who put him up to ask that question, and I said, it happened twice. Young people whose minds are simply being poisoned against their soul. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. And we're not talking about Haredi kids with longer bias or something. These are all blue-blooded Canadian boys brought up in a modern community, and they are being inculcated with sinas Eretz Yisrael. All right. Now, you're going to have to follow my instructions because things don't always work out for me the way I want it. The Gemara that we're going to deal with is third and fourth page. But there wasn't enough place for the first part of the Gemara. Wait, don't go anyplace. It just worked out that there was another shtickle Gemara where it starts that I couldn't get on the page. So that appears as number 1 on the first sheet. Number 1 on the left-hand side. It says, Ketubot, continued next page, follow me. The Gemara begins to discuss whether it is permissible to emigrate from Babylonia to Eretz Yisrael. Gemara in Ksuvos. Reb Zeira havi kamishtamit minei v'Rav Yehuda. Reb Zeira, he avoided his Rebbe, Reb Yehuda. They are in Bavel. Reb Zeira wants to go on Aliyah. We are talking 2nd century Babylon, 2nd, maybe beginning of the 3rd, not even 2nd century. 3rd century. around there, okay? Rav Zeir wants to go on Aliyah, but he knows that his Rebbe, Rebbe Yehuda, is opposed. So you know what Rav Zeir did? He stayed out of Rebbe Yehuda's way. The Gemara, by the way, appears another two times in Shas, one in the Sechta Brachas, the other in the Sechta Shabbos, and the one in the Sechta Shabbos was just in Daf Yomi about a week or two ago. Same Gemara, but here it's more fully elaborated on. So Reb Zeira avoids his Rebbe, because he knows that his Rebbe is opposed to him going on Aliyah. The boy Lamesik Eretz Yisrael, because Reb Zeira wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael, and he knew that Rav Yehuda was opposed to it. The Omar Rav Yehuda, because Rav Yehuda said, Kol ha'ola nibodel le'eretz Yisrael, over baseh. Whoever goes on Aliyah from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael transgresses a positive commandment. Shem Ne'amar, as it says, now you go to the next page. It should say, Bavel or Yuvahu. You have that?
Yeah.
Bavel or Yuvahu. V'shoma yiyu av yom pavdi otam lom Hashem. Rav Yehuda says that anybody who goes from Babel to Eretz Yisrael transgresses a positive commandment, and obviously a positive commandment from the prophets, because Yirmiyahu is the one who told the Jewish people, Babel or Yuvahu, they shall be brought to Babel, and Shoma Yiyu, there they shall remain, Ad Yom Pagdi Otam, until the day that I remember them, Lo'om Hashem, says God. But wait a minute. If his Rebbe, Rebbe Yehuda, has a pasuk that says, Bavel or Yuvo, they should come to Bavel and stay there until I remember them, so why does Reb Zeira want to go against his Rebbe's position? Why should he do that? So the Gemara goes on to explain, Rebbe Zeira, how who beklei shareis ksiv. Reb Zeira says, that pasuk is talking about Klei Sharet. Klei Sharet is, Yirmiyahu is talking and telling the Jewish people that the vessels of the Bet HaMikdash are going to be taken off into captivity. They're going to be taken to Babel and they will remain there until I will bring them back. Not talking about people. It's talking about whatever Kalim they took. I don't know if they took the menorah, the shulchan, the mizbech, whatever they took. By the way, anybody who looks into the psukim, all you have to do is read the psukim, and you'll see that Rav Zeira is absolutely correct. That's what the pasuk is talking about. But we're not going to say that Rav Yehuda is making a big mistake. Rav Yehuda is not making a big mistake. One of the things, of course, that we're going to have to deal with, and I don't believe we're going to deal with that at all today, is what indeed was the position of Rav Yehuda. Why was Rav Yehuda opposed to going on Aliyah? We also have to understand that Rav Zeira may have been opposed only, as he says, from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, but from Canada to Eretz Yisrael? No problem. Why is it from Babel to Eretz Yisrael? Because Babel at the time was the fortress of Torah in the world. And even that is not so simple. Because remember, there's a Gemara in Sukkos that says better to live in a city where the majority are goyim in Eretz Yisrael rather than live in the Golan, in a city that the majority are Jews. So you have to understand Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is an enigma, but you have to know a lot of information in order to understand the fullness and the greatness of Rabbi Yehuda. Don't for a moment think that Rabbi Yehuda is chas v'shalom, like off the wall. Absolutely not. Rabbi Yehuda is a giant, and we will get down to explaining it. Anyway, Reb Zeira, I'll tell you why. One of the things that I told those fellows in Toronto at the Yom Yerushalayim gathering, I said that part of my story with Eretz Yisrael is rooted in Toronto. Before I went on Aliyah, I had certain questions, certain problems, certain difficulties, And I decided that there's one man that I want to talk to, and his name is Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Sefer Tzadik Berach. Rabbi Yaakov was then in Toronto. His second wife, I'll tell you the whole story already. If I said it there, I can tell it to you here. His second wife had her children and grandchildren living in Toronto. I was in New York. I called Rabbi Yaakov. I told him, listen, I want to come up. I have to talk to you about something important. He says, come. Okay. I spent an hour and a half with him. And of course, when I told this crowd over there that it was at 147 Palm Drive, so a lot of people were able to focus in on precisely where I'm sitting with Rabbi Yaakov back in in November of 1980. One of the things that Rabbi Yaakov told me, it was a memorable conversation. He said to me, you should know that I believe that it is a mitzvah today the way it always was to live in Eretz Yisrael. And if I could, I would go to the airport now and get onto a plane and go to Eretz Yisrael. But I can't. I never said the rest of the story, but I decided to say it in Toronto. He said, but I can't because my wife can't leave her children and grandchildren. Now, the fact is that the Gemara says that if a husband or a wife want to go on Aliyah and the other spouse doesn't want to go, you can coerce the spouse to go or give them a get. Ichav Sechel instead. I'm not mechutzus enough to go and ask Rav Yaakov that question. Me. But God is good. 2 weeks after that conversation, I was at a conference in New York that had been called, a rabbinic conference in New York that Rabbi Yaakov had called. There were 500 rabbis there. It was a 2-day conference. This was on Sunday, the first day of the conference. Rabbi Yaakov, toward the end of his speech, says, I want to ask your forgiveness, but I'm not going to be able to spend tomorrow with you. And I'll tell you why. Because, by the way, he's 91 years old then. He says, because I promised my wife that I'm going to take her on vacation. And I'm going to take her tomorrow. We're going to Florida. Then he says, when my first wife died, I was 68 years old. I was so broken, I was certain I would never reach age 70. And then I married my second wife. And she has kept me alive until today. So, a fellow rabbi who's sitting next to me, can you imagine? He's soon going to have his silver wedding anniversary with his second wife. What did I learn from that? That for Rabbi Yaakov, his second wife was pushing pikuach nefesh. She kept him alive. I was thrilled then that I hadn't asked him that question earlier. In another part of the conversation, I mentioned this Gemara. You see, there was a great rabbi who didn't want me to go on Aliyah. And I had sent him a letter, and it's still a big shaila whether I asked him a shaila or I asked for a bracha. I think I asked for a bracha. All right, but let me know what you say there. Everything's open. The Babatzur Rebbe sent me a letter saying that he shouldn't go on Aliyah. Because anybody who is in the rabbinate or in Jewish education and is successful and leaves his post is a deserter from the front lines for the struggle for Jewish survival. We need all the rabbis and educators we can get. Don't go. So then I was in a quandary. That's why I went up to see Rabbi Yaakov to ask him for permission not to listen to the Rebbe. I mean, I'm a little scared of rabbis, you understand? I'm scared, yeah. I was afraid. So he told me, but the Rebbe is a great man, and what he says makes sense. So I told him, I can't help him. So, and then I told him, listen, Rav Zeirid knew that his Rebbe didn't want him to go on Aliyah, and despite that, Rav Zeirid went on Aliyah. I told him this Gemara. So he laughs at me and he says, Rav Zeira Gehat Seichel. Rav Zeira was smart, he didn't ask his Rebbe. So let's finish that. Rav Zeira Gehat Seichel. Rav Zeira had Seichel. Rav Yehuda, who now knows of Rav Zeira's response that the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Bavelo Yuvol, they shall come to Babel and there shall remain, is really talking about the clay Bet Hamidash. So the Gemara says, Rav Yehuda, Siv Krach, Nina, Rav Yehuda says, there's another pasuk he has. Here is where it becomes very sticky. A pasuk in Shir HaShirim, and the fact is the pasuk is repeated another two times in Shir HaShirim, come out in the same words. Hizbarti etchem b'no Yerushalayim b'tzva'ot o'vayelot hasadeh, I have caused you to swear of daughters of Jerusalem by the gazelles of the hinds of the field. Should you wake or rouse the love until it pleases? The pasuk says the following: Hishbati etchem b'no Yerushalayim b'tzva'ot o'vayelot hasadeh in ta'ilu v'in ta'oriru et ha'ava ad shetechpatz, which means the following, as the Gemara is going to learn: I have administered an oath to you, daughters of Yerushalayim, Jewish people, that you shall not arouse or awaken the love ad shetechpatz, until the time will come when it should be so. So Rabbi Yehuda says the following. So Rabbi Yehuda says, this verse teaches us, metaphorically, that we are bound by an oath not to ascend Eretz Yisrael until the final redemption. I've made you take an oath not to go to Eretz Yisrael until the Geula, ultimate Geula, comes. I mean, this is of course powerful, powerful stuff for anybody who wants to say that, listen, we have no business being in Eretz Yisrael until, you know, something miraculous has happened. Rav Zeira deals with that pasuk in a different way. Hahu shelo yaru Yisrael b'choma. These are the classic words. Hahu shelo yaru Yisrael b'choma. The verse in the Song of Songs means that only that the Jewish people should not converge upon Eretz Yisrael in a wall of force. Shelo yaru, that they shall not go up b'choma, like a wall, a mass of people going up to Eretz Yisrael to conquer it. You're not allowed to conquer Eretz Yisrael. Now you hear what we're dealing with? Oh, do we have a great deal to deal with? So now the Rav Zeira therefore says that what's prohibited from that pasuk is Jews going en masse, but an individual Jew can go on Aliyah anytime he wants. The individual Jew can go. But for Jews to gather an army in Galicia and go up to conquer Eretz Yisrael, that you're not allowed to do. By the way, we never did that. We never did it because we knew we would never succeed in doing that. Yes?
But that's what we did in the time of Yeshua.
In the time of Yeshua, there was a God who told us to go in. We're talking now about a time when there is no God or prophet to tell us what to do. Of course God commanded us. It's a mitzvah in Torah to conquer our soul. But as long as we are in Golos after the Churban, that's what he's talking about. The oath is administered for all time. Yes? So if you want to ask those questions, so there are other questions I can ask. I mean, it's very important. What you ask is very important. Do you know of any time at which all of Israel raised their right hands and say, when was the oath administered? Who administered it? Well, how do you know about it? Wait a minute, we're not finished. You're going to have more questions before we begin to answer it. Rabbi Yehuda presents another source. Kishbati achninoksiv. There's another pasuk kishbati. The pasuk kishbati, I made you take it off, is written again. And so Rabbi Yehuda wants to say that when it says another oath, the other oath is that even an individual shall not go on Aliyah. Rabbi Yehuda is opposed to Aliyah completely. So Reb Zeira says, Hahum boile. Reb Zeira is really telling us it isn't only twice that the Pasuk says, I have administered an oath to you. There's a third time. Reb Zeira says, we need that, Reb Yosef and Reb Chanina, to tell us what we were taught by Reb Yosef and Reb Chanina. Da'ama. Reb Yosef Reb Chanina said, Shalosh Shvuos Halalu Lama. These three oaths, what are they all about? When I was growing up in Williamsburg, you understand? So one of the topics of conversation was the Shula Shvius. The Shula Shvius. I mentioned to somebody this morning the Shula Shvius didn't know what he was talking about. When I said the Shalosh Shavuot, but I was raised in Williamsburg, and the underpinning of Satmar ideology with regard to Eretz Yisrael is based on the Shula Shvius. The Satmar Rebbe wrote three svarim on the Shalosh Shvius. It was also the position that was taken before him by the Munkach Rebbe, and at the same time that the Munkach Rebbe took that position, may surprise you, the Rav Sholem Duber of Lubavitch, Rav Sholem Duber Schneerson, was also opposed to Aliyah Peretz Yisrael. Those were the three giants, and then of course there were many others, but those were the three giants who were opposed to having anything to do with any of the groups that were involved in going on Aliyah. I mean, of course, we will get at one point to the whole array of Gedolei Yisrael who were indeed in favor of it. Long, long lists of Gedolei Yisrael. Yes? Didn't what? Oh, that's a very good question. Didn't Ramban know this Gemara? Wait a minute. The most fascinating aspect of this all, who's saying it? Reb Zeira. And Reb Zeira goes on Aliyah. They're saying Reb Zeira, who's staying out of his Rebbe's way, is the one who tells us this Gemara. That means something. How did Reb Zeira see it? So obviously Reb Zeira saw it. As masses of Jews are not permitted to go up. You can't mount an army and invade Eretz Yisrael. But what happens if over a period of years individual Jews stop coming, and there are millions of Jews in Eretz Yisrael who've come individually to Eretz Yisrael? Any struggle that takes place afterwards is already self-defense. Milchemet Mitzvah. It's not the same thing. That's not what we're talking about. That's not what happened in our generation. In the last 100 years, we didn't land on the shores of Tel Aviv, you understand? We didn't conquer Eretz Yisrael. We didn't come up to Eretz Yisrael en masse to conquer. But there are going to be so many other answers, so many other understandings of this Gemara that it's going to be so fascinating. It's going to be a history of the Jewish people in the last 100 years. Mamish a history. Anyway, he says, Shalosh Shvuos Halalu Lama. What are these three oaths? Achas. One, Shalom Yahweh Yisrael Bachoma, that Israel shall not go up like a wall, like a mass of people to conquer. Two, the Achas, and one of them, Shehishbiach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is Yisrael, that the Holy One, blessed be He, caused the Jewish people to swear, Shalom Yindidu B'umach HaOlam, that they will not rebel against the nations of the world. What that really means is, it was very, very good advice to the Jewish people to be good citizens in whichever country they find themselves. And Jews should not be part of movements to rebel against the nations amongst which they live. By the way, there were periods in which Jews became involved in revolutionary movements. All were doomed. And they doomed the Jewish people with them. We never succeeded in any kind of a revolution. Klal Yisrael are being given good, sound advice for their sojourn throughout history. Don't rebel against the nations of the world. The third oath is the one that's going to shake you up, and I think the third one is the one that has to begin to give us some kind of an insight into what we're talking about here. What are these oaths about? The third, V'achas, one of them is that God calls the nations of the world to swear, Shalom Yishtabdu Behen B'Yisrael Yotemidai, not to subjugate the Jewish people more than is necessary. But let me ask you, do you know of when the nations of the world will gather together and God said to them, say after me, we shall not subjugate the Jewish people Yotemidai? When did this take place? Obviously, you know what we're talking about over here. When it comes down to the bottom line, though we will give you all sorts of opinions, the question becomes these three oaths. Are these oaths halacha or agada? Now let me explain what that means. The Talmud has two kinds of statements. The overwhelming number of statements in the Talmud are statements of halacha, legally binding decisions. And then there are all sorts of agadic statements. Agadic statements don't have to be taken literally. I'll give you two examples that we've talked about in the past. When the Medrash says that the Avraham Avinu's parents had an idol store, and they left one day and they left him in charge of the idols to, as we always say, to idle sit or sit idly by, yeah. And they went out, and so he chopped up all the idols and left the axe in the hand of the biggest idol. Right. Now, what happens if you don't believe that story ever happened? Are you a kofer b'ikra? No, you're certainly not. It must probably never did happen. What the Medrash is saying is that the intellectual power of Avraham Avinu was such that he was able to shatter the idolatry of his time. He became the great intellectual force against idolatry and paganism. And the Medrash couches it in such beautiful terminology. Somebody got a hold of me, was it here or in Toronto? You know, I get all mixed up already. He wanted to know Pshat, you know, the Medrash says in his book, the Gemara Rashi brings it, that before God gave Torah to the Jewish people, he offered it to the nations of the world. So he wanted to know, like how did God do it? Who did he go to first? I look at this cell and I tell him, Habibi! You really think that the Levation went to Esav and offered in Torah? What are you talking about? You really think he went to Yishmael and offered in Torah? You know what the Medrash is saying? The Medrash is saying that God knew that the nations of the world are unwilling and will never be willing to accept Torah from him, each one for their own reasons. He doesn't have to go and ask them, and maybe just one with God, I'm in the middle of a busy phone call. Just can you wait until I'm finished, you know, have him cool his heels until he also... I mean, anybody who learns that medrash and learns it literally, you know, that the Kabbalist takes his little satchel in hand and he goes around the world to meet with the nations of the world, because it's has a real problem. What the medrash is saying is God understood the evil of nations of the world or their inability to accept the heavenly yoke. That's what the Medrash means. Do I have to understand this Gemara as a statement of halachic fact? You're not allowed to go up to Eretz Yisrael en masse. Or is it very good advice that our rabbis couched in the terms of an oath, God never caused the nations of the world to swear. That we have no record of the nations of the world saying, oh, we're going to be good to the Jewish people. We're not going to be bad to them. It has to be looked at as agadic in nature, not halachic. And if it's not halachic, then the movements in history become terribly, terribly significant. If Jews are suffering in Europe, and there are others who say, let's go to Eretz Yisrael, you go to Eretz Yisrael. But there were always those who were opposed. And all opposition was based on this Gemara. That's why the Gemara is going to have to be understood. There's a tremendous amount of information. I'm going to try and impart the most significant parts. Where I say it's not going to be done in one year. We didn't finish the Gemara yet. Next page. Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda said that individuals, one fact, he still maintains his position. Rabbi Yehuda still maintains his position. It's, you have the sheet, it's on the, just turn it over, it's on the back page. Now we're on the back page. No. Have the two sheets together, and on the back page. Rabbi Yehuda said that individuals were in fact sworn not to immigrate to Eretz Yisrael, because in each of these verses it says, I had said it before to you, the end of the pasuk is, in to'iru v'inta'odinu, in to'iru, should you awaken or arouse the love? Don't awaken or arouse the love, which means the return of Jews to Eretz Yisrael or the Messianic era, until God wants. So he says that since he used two words, to'idu and to'oridu, one tells us that Jews is on maschanabdo, and the other tells us that Jews as individuals should not go on an aliyah. Rab Zeira, we're still to the Rab Zeira. Tell you, I think I once mentioned my mother-in-law, Allah Shalom, always wanted to know, did Rab Zeira succeed when he came to Eretz Yisrael? She was so worried about our going on Aliyah. And I don't know, somehow or other she heard about Rab Zeira. She always asked me, tell me more about Rab Zeira. Whatever happened to Rab Zeira? I think I may have saw something we're going to come to. The Gemara said that Rav Zeira, when he came on Aliyah, he fasted 100 fasts to forget the Torah of Chutzlars, the Torah of Bavel. And one of the Mepharshim says he fasted that people should forget the Sholosh Shvuos that he wrote, because he was afraid that in some latter day people are going to misinterpret it, and they're going to use what he said as an excuse not to go on Aliyah. But we'll see that. So anyway, Rav Zeira says now another Liboy Lili Ked Rav Levi, he needs it like Rav Levi. Da'omah, the three Shavuos now become six. Da'omah, Sheish Shavuos, Halol Lomah. What are these six oaths administered? You know why there were six? Because in each pasuk it says, in to'idu v'in to'oridu, arouse and awaken, arouse and awaken. Now turns each one of the shvuot into two. It's not one, it's two. Two times three is six. Klosa hanibiyamin. The first three are the ones that we already said. Shalom yamu yisrael b'chomad juh shalagom amas. Shalom yimredu Yisrael, Israel shall not rebel against the nations of the world. And shvua to the nations of the world that they should not cause Jews to suffer. What are the other three? Enoch. Shalom yim. These are very fascinating. Shalom yigalu et hakeitz. Here they say that the prophets among the Jewish people should not reveal the end. There are things that remain within the Jewish people. They don't tell anybody. Number two, this is very important. This is very important. This is another one of the few words that has been so discussed over the last 300, 400, 500 years. The Shalogia Hakuet HaKeitz, and that the Jewish people should not distance the end. Lo yirachaku, they shouldn't make the case, the end of days distant, push it away. Why, in what way would we push the end of days, delay it? Through our sins. The issue over here is going to become the following. There are other texts, and Rashi in fact brings the other texts, which says not lo yirachaku et hakeitz, ela lo yidichaku et hakeitz. It's not a reish in that word, but it's a dalel. Lo yidichaku et hakeitz can have a completely different meaning. They shouldn't push to the end of time. Don't go ahead and try to bring the end too quickly. That already can also be interpreted as, you know, Jews going on mass terror to Israel. Others interpret it as an attempt to build the Beit HaMikdash. Don't be in a rush to bring about the end of history. And then the Shalom Yigalu Asod Leotei Kechavim, they should not reveal the secrets to idolaters. You can't reveal secrets. What secrets these are? There are differences of opinion. What secrets are we talking about? I think our footnote must tell us. Number 13. The reference is either to the secret of intercalation. This is why I say I need a dictionary when I learn from art school. You understand? The Gemara I may be able to figure out without art school, but my English. Intercalation. Intercalation are the calculations by which we make the Jewish calendar. A braisa containing a set of cryptic teachings concerning the complex methods and calculations of the Jewish calendar. Sod ha'ibur, sod ha'ibur. I mean, we're going to have to understand what all of this means. We're not finished with this yet. But first we finished the Gemara, except for one more paragraph, also an extremely significant paragraph. The end of the pasuk, we've dealt already with each one of these three psukim. Hishbati etchem v'not Yerushalayim. The last part of the pasuk is im to'iru v'im to'iru. In the middle it says, b'tzva'ot o b'ayelot ha'sadeh, by the gazelles or by the hinds of the field, Amar Abalaza. Here we find Manish, the underpinning of Satmar ideology. Amalek Makodish Baruch Hu Yisrael, Makodish Baruch Hu said to Israel, "Im atem mekayim et hashvua mutav, if you abide by the oath, it'll be good. V'im lav, ani matir et besachem mitzvaot u'bailot u'kailot hasadeh, I will permit your flesh to be hunted as the gazelles and the hinds of the field." Satmar Hashkafa is the Shoah happened because of Zionism. Because the Gemara says quite clearly, if you break the oath, then I'm going to leave your flesh open to the beasts of the field. The whole Korban came only because of Zionism. He blames it all on Zionism. The other side of the coin, of course, is the Ein Habon and Smechar of Yisrael, Shlomo Tarto, who says the Shoah came because Jews didn't go Aliyah. We, of course, take what I consider the best position. We don't know. We don't know. We don't know. All right. One of the fascinating questions that asked on Satna is the following. If it's because Jews went on Aliyah, who should have suffered? The Jews who came on Aliyah. There were 400,000 Jews living in Eretz Yisrael. This is where there should have been concentration camps. Those who didn't go on Aliyah, they suffer because 400,000 Jews went on Aliyah, not 6 million died because 400,000 went on Aliyah. That doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense whatsoever. In other words, the sinners get off scot-free. And I'm going to be that. We've talked a number of times in the future that the beginning of the end of Hitler started at the gates there in Israel. His first defeat in the Second World War is El Alamein, when he's a day's journey from Eretz Yisrael. And Jews in Eretz Yisrael are walking around with poison pills in their pockets. So to say that the Shoah came because of Zionism does stretch the imagination a little bit. Okay, now you have the basic text. You now not only know the Shulishvius, you also know the Sheishvius. Not only the three oaths, you know the six oaths. Ah, now what we're going to have to begin to do is take a look. Do you think that these Gemaras were discovered by Rav Sholem Duber of Chabad or Rav Elezer Shapira of Munkach or of Yael Teichman of Satna? These Gemaras were always around. And what is going to emerge is that there has been such fascinating, powerful debate. Or, taking a look, how are we supposed to see this Gemara? That's what we should know. Let's go back to the first page. It said number one. We finished number one, and we're going to refer back to number one. Number one is the Gemara in Ksubas, the Gemara of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Zera. We're going to learn two more Gemaras now. One is in the Sechta Yuma, and one is in the Sechta Brachas. When you will have the texts of the Gemara spread, and we'll be ready to deal with the rest. The Gemara in Yuma. And this Gemara I told you on a number of occasions. Resh Lakish, having sochin b'yardana, Resh Lakish, who lived in Eretz Yisrael, once swimming in the Jordan River. This is in the Sechta Yuma, that Tessa Mabes, he was swimming in the Jordan. Also, Rabba Barachona, who was from Babylonia, came and noticed him starting to leave the water. Thereupon, Yahavle Yode, Rabba Barachona extended his hand to Resh Lakish to help him come out of the water. Amale, Resh Lakish said to Rabba Barachona, by the way, I want you to know, Rabbi Baba Chanan was the strong one of the saintliest, one of the saintliest of the rabbis of the Talmud. There's a great deal written about Rabbi Baba Chanan. And here Rabbi Baba Chanan extends his hand to Resh Lakish to help him out of Jordan. And look what he gets. He gets it in the face. El Hosanin Elohu. God hates you Babylonians. God hates all Babylonian Jews who did not ascend to Eretz Yisrael in the days of Ezra. God hates you. There is another pshat in the Gemara. The other pshat in the Gemara is Elaha. I swear to God, I hate you Babylonians because you didn't come on Aliyah in the days of Ezra. Resh Lakish is about 700 years after Ezra. And he holds an ancient grudge to Babylonian Jews that they didn't come on Aliyah together with Ezra. Tichtiv, and he brings another pasuk in Shir HaShirim. Im Chomahi, if there'll be a wall, Nivne Olah Tidat Kesef, let's build a crown of silver upon it. V'im Delet Hi, and if it's a wall, a door, Notzur Olah Aluach Erez, let us enclose her with a cedar panel. What does this mean? Reish Lakish says, you know what that pasuk means? In Chomahi, if Jews would have come up en masse like a wall in the days of Ezra, the second Beit HaMikdash would have lasted forever. But because they didn't come on Aliyah, it was like a door made of wood. If they would have come on Aliyah, it would have been like a door made of silver that never rots. Im asitam atzmachem kichkoma, had you Israel made yourself like a wall, v'alitam kulchem bimei Ezra, and gone up all together in the days of Ezra, nimshaltem karkesef, you would have been comparable to silver, she'ein rekev sholatrei, which is not subject to decay. Achav shalitem kidolatot, now that you ascended like doors, small groups, no big groups, nimshaltem ke'edez, you are comparable to cedar, she'arekev sholatba. This Gemara obviously disagrees with the Gemara in Ksus. The Gemara over here says that they should have come en masse. They should have come en masse. One could say that there is a difference, that in the days of Ezra, there were prophets who told them to go on Aliyah. Not everybody learns that way. But it seems clear that Reish Lakish is saying this 700 years later. He's telling Rabbi Baruch Hanan, you're guilty too. And most probably the guilt of Rabbi Baruch Hanan is because you didn't come on Aliyah now. Gemara in Brachot. Gemara says on a pasuk in Shir HaShir, in Oz Yashir, we say it every day in Davening. Ad Yavaran Farshem,